Welcome to Volume 1, Episode 4 of Vermont Movement News. This episode will give reports back on the Extinction Rebellion protest in Montpelier, Vermont, and an interview with a dump activist from Newport, Vermont, and finally, an interview with an activist from Bennington, whose well was contaminated with PFOA. Vermont Movement News publishes news and interviews with activists from Vermont and elsewhere, with a focus on analyzing tactics. We seek to have discussions on the ways to change the world for the better. Vermont Movement News publishes news and interviews with activists from Vermont and elsewhere, with a focus on analyzing tactics. We seek to have discussions on the ways to change the world for the better. The opinions of people interviewed on Vermont Movement News are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Vermont Movement News. Please forgive the peeping, cheeping sounds. Our studio was being shared with a couple rescued guinea fowl keats. They were still a bit traumatized from what happened to them and the rest of their flock. As of the production of this podcast, they are happy with their new flock of chicken chicks, and you do not hear them in the background.
Today we have a person who has been very active in the Newport community. She runs many community message boards, and she's been very concerned about the dump in Coventry that's possibly contaminating Lake Mephremagog and has been polluting the area with horrible stenches. Pam Ladds, welcome.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Okay, how did you first become involved with the issue of the dump?
I'm having to sort of mentally backtrack. A group of people heard that Casella Waste or Northeast Kingdom Waste Services Vermont, which is written as News VT, which makes it look like a media site, was applying to expand the existing dump. And when this finally sort of rose to the surface, it was already after ANR had granted the permit. Now, clearly there was something wrong with this picture. If information was so hard to come by that this was being re-permitted and the permit was extending, there had to be more to this story. And a group of people got really involved, and I was one of the people they asked to join.
How long ago was this?
It was the end of August last year, exactly a year ago.
So what had been done about the issue of the dump?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, and actually your timing is absolutely perfect, because yesterday Act 250 released their report, which is an enormous document. The Act 250 hearing was, I think, in November or December last year. It's really hard to remember the dates now, and I don't have them. And that was a hearing where some people were allowed to, quote, testify because they had a vested interest. For example, Dan Govin, who has the airport, which is right next to the dump, and some of the near neighbors, and of course the city of Newport and the city of Coventry, they were on the list of those who were expected to testify. And then there were those who really had to keep applying to be a, quote, friend of the process. And dump got to be a friend, which meant that a lot of us could go to the hearing, which was a public hearing. And if time allowed, we were allowed to speak. Well, time did allow, and we all spoke. It was a five-hour marathon hearing. But it's taken since then until yesterday for the hearing results to be released. And the end of that is that the Act 250 panel have agreed that the dump will be allowed to expand. It can continue with that. That's the bad news. But the good news, and there is good news, there are two pieces of good news. One is that Casella has to hire an external monitor, because what they've been doing up until now is policing themselves. So we've had this wonderful situation where the fox has been sitting very firmly inside the chicken coop. But now they've got to hire somebody external to do that, and that is to follow up on all of the odor reports. You live in the area. There was an incredible stench yesterday and the day before. What happened when people called in to report it, which is what they have to do, they were cross-examined about the smell and asked, were they really sure that that's what it was. Weren't they possibly confusing it with manure spread on the field, et cetera, et cetera? So everything has been done to discourage people reporting the smells. That won't be able to happen anymore.
Do you think that reports will actually have an effect on what Casella does, or do you think they'll just keep on doing business as usual?
They're a business, and I'm sure they will keep on doing business as usual. But if they're being monitored, they can't be quite as cavalier about it. They can't blow off all of the concerns. We would like them not to be a business, but that is exactly where they are. And businesses don't have a conscience. And Casella Waste is this really strange mix of an awful industry and a local business. They employ people locally. They actually employ quite a lot of people. And they have done good in the community. So it's really hard to separate out the pieces. So the only thing that we can do is not make it a personal fight. I mean, we have to go after the business where they're not doing the right thing and still acknowledge the people who need to work there. They need jobs. It's that dilemma. And John Casella, I mean, I can be the first to say rude things about him for some of the things that he's done. But at the same time, he has supported a lot of local nonprofits. He's supported good stuff. He has helped the organization that is buying the boat, which is about the health of the lake. That's an environmental organization. So, you know, it's that whole juxtaposition of the good, bad, and the ugly all wrapped up in one package.
What would your organization want in the best of all possible worlds?
In all possible worlds, we would absolutely love the landfill not to expand. The other thing that we did get, which is the other piece of good news, is Newport has been told they can no longer take the leachate unless the water treatment plant is upgraded, which will be to the tune of several million dollars, to make it able to filter out a lot of the components, chemicals that are in the leachate. Leachate is the juice that comes from a landfill. A landfill doesn't just store crap. It, as it gets rained on and as it gets compacted over the years, it oozes, and the ooze is called leachate. That has been sent to Newport, to Burlington, to Essex Junction, to Montpelier, and to a couple of other places where it's been run through our water treatment plants, which are not designed to treat it. The reward for doing that has been a lot of money. So Newport, for example, has been receiving $185,000 a year for taking Casella's waste.
What chemicals are in the leachate that are of concern? Can you enumerate those and what the dangers from those are?
Yeah, I mean, the ones that are the main concern right now are a series of chemicals which are in the fluoride family called PFOA. I can't remember all what they stand for. PFAS, and you'll read a lot about it currently in the media. Those are the buzzwords. And that's a group of chemicals that are, quote, forever chemicals. They don't break down. If they can be modified in any way, they break into components that are even more toxic, and they don't disappear. They're not water soluble. So as they're released into the lake, they're there forever. They've been linked with thyroid cancer. They've been linked with kidney cancer. They are endocrine disruptors. So the impact that the potential is be on our health is pretty severe. What finally got the attention of Act 250, this is, again, the good news, is our lake, Lake Memphremagog, only 25% of Memphremagog is in Vermont. 75% is in Quebec, Canada. And this lake is a reservoir. It's the drinking water for Sherbrooke and for parts of Magog. So needless to say, when they learned that leachate was basically being shoved unfiltered into the lake, they were totally flipped out. That could poison and kill a lot of people. So the good news is that Newport cannot take the leachate anymore. They have 90 days to quit. I'm sure they'll appeal, but I think that their days of appealing are done. And my guess is Casella Waste will move on to other sites. They're not going to be invested enough in Newport to keep pushing for that. And then it will be up to places like Montpelier and Burlington, because when the leachate is run through their equally crappy systems, it goes into Lake Champlain. And we all know the drama around Champlain. But again, the good news there is there's a lot of eyes in Chittenden County, and that's not just the puny little NEK. We are the sacrifice zone with the canary in the coal mine. And this is going to get their attention.
Yes, I can't imagine that with the environmental organizations in Burlington and in Montpelier that they could get away with this exactly. The way they have in the NEK.
Right.
Speaking of which, yesterday there was an action in Montpelier where Extinction Rebellion basically shut the city down to draw attention to degradation of the environment and climate change.
That's great. Where's the publicity for that? I haven't seen anything about it yet.
I think it'll be going in the news today because it was yesterday that it happened, and they basically shut off the highways in Montpelier. Do you think there's room for similar tactics in the NEK?
I think there's room for the tactics. The hard part is getting the person power and having to be real clear about what the messaging is. What do we want to achieve with that? We have talked about doing things like that with the landfill. It's a very small disruption, though, in the great scheme of things. We just don't have the population. Montpelier does. Burlington does.
Well, it might be a good idea to get to link up with Extinction Rebellion.
Yes.
They've done several of these actions in Vermont already.
Uh-huh. That's a good idea. I'll do that.
I scoped out the area of the landfill. The ingress for the landfill is just a tiny little loop road.
Right.
Honestly, five people could shut that down.
Exactly.
And make quite a statement.
It would make a statement, but the publicity isn't necessarily going to be helpful. And that's the dilemma, because we're such a small community. It's okay, so you've shut down an entrance. Who cares?
Yes. It might get it in Vermont statewide news
In
a more effective manner, and it might draw other activists who have more person power. That's what I was thinking.
It's true, but I think what's going to make more of an impact is when Extinction Rebellion and some other groups recognize that Montpelier is taking leachate, a lot of leachate, way more than we ever did. And so, you know, that if we were getting $185,000 a year here, they're getting a lot more than that. I think we can make more of an impact there than we can up here.
Yeah.
I love the commentary from your rooster.
Yes. People have mentioned that about the show, that they enjoy the chickens and other birds in the background.
Rural NEK, I love it.
Yes. In my backyard, wandering around with the chickens. So is there anything else you want to add to this interview? Who do you want to get involved? Do you want people from out of the NEK throwing themselves into this struggle?
Absolutely. I want them to know what goes into the waterways, that as we, with our throwaway society, just toss stuff in our garbage, that comes back to bite us directly and indirectly. We are poisoning ourselves, the that we use. I mean, the PFOAs and PFASs and the other similar chemicals, and those are the ones we know about. There's many more. Those are the chemicals that poisoned Bennington. We all know what they did there. That's in the pots and pans that we use. That's in dental floss. That's in other chemicals, other products, plastic bags. As we use this stuff and toss it and brush our teeth even.
It's what makes polyethylene plastic flexible, correct?
Yes. And it can be used as a coating. So on your dental floss, for example, and if you read what goes into dental floss, Glide has it. Some of the others don't, but they don't slide. They say, oh, I want Glide. It glides through. Well, sure it does, because that's what it's coated with. But we're poisoning ourselves.
How does this struggle against environmental destruction and degradation, how does that tie into the existential fight against fascism that we're all engaging in these days?
That's a good question, because it seems like an enormous leap. But again, it's one person becoming conscious of their impact in the world. And if, as an individual, become aware of the impact that you're having on the universe, positively and negatively, by the things that we use, the things that we throw out, it's a step towards becoming aware of how we all interact with each other and the rest of the environment. And that ties into fascism. I've been listening to some of the Mueller hearings today. I have morbid things. And when I listen to some of the people who have cross-examined him, who you can only really describe as fascists.
Yes.
Yeah. You've got to sort of begin to connect the dots.
How have the interactions with local people and local politics, how has that gone? What's the nature of that interaction these days?
Fascism or for the environment?
For you, for Dump.
Okay, for Dump, it's interesting because it's a sort of slow growth. I mean, Dump's a really interesting group because it has people in it from the far left, and I can see and it has others who are really way to the right who are still big Trump supporters. Fascinating. We can all meet in the same room. We can be on the same page around this issue, and we can work together well. And then some of that rubs off. I mean, there has to be the beginnings of a dialogue, a constructed dialogue, as opposed to us all taking our respective corners and screaming names at each other. The other thing that's happened with Dump is that initially people didn't get that it was a problem, didn't get that the landfill could be poisoning us. And they're now beginning to recognize that. That's taken a year. But if you read the reports now in the paper, they're very different from the ones that were there in the beginning. It's taken much more seriously. The reporters are actually looking at what the chemicals do. They're becoming knowledgeable about them. And some of the conversations with people on the street are much more knowledge-based rather than just opinion.
Yes, that's good.
Impact with our city council, that would be something else. Because our city manager and mayor, I am sure for predominantly financial reasons, really wanted to keep the leachate coming to the lake. Well, that's hopefully now been taken away. So it could be very interesting to see how the dialogue changes there.
We yes.
At least two of the city council members are not in support of the leachate going into the lake. So I'm sure they will be pushing that line. And hopefully the others become better educated.
Yes. I've been surprised by some of the people involved in city government who seem otherwise progressive, who've aggressively defended the Dump. Do you have anything to say as to why they've done this and the interaction there?
I think it's really tough. I mean, I was also surprised by that. I think a part of it is based on wanting to believe that those who tell you it's okay know what they're talking about. I mean, it is very tempting to believe in official experts. Unfortunately, official experts, as most of us know, are frequently not correct. Or the party line that they tout at the moment is not really a very smart one, and it will be superseded later. I mean, if you use cigarettes as an example, a few decades ago, medical people, physicians, were telling their patients to smoke. You know, it was so good for them, calm them down. And now, of course, they're in totally the other position. And I think the same thing has happened with the Agency of Natural Resources. We want to believe that those who are in charge of protecting us are actually going to do that. And it's very disillusioning when they're not doing that, when they're not doing the job, when they are also being funded by Casella Waste. ANR, for example, gets paid $6 on every ton of junk that's dropped in the landfill. That's a lot of money. Funds that organization. So willful blindness is something that I think is endemic. I think it's endemic anywhere where there's a payoff. It's really important not to know, not to believe. And I think that even for city council members who are not paid and who are not normally willfully blind, that can get in the way.
I'm going to be speaking with a woman who's next, whose house is unsaleable in Bennington because of this very same chemical.
Yes. There are houses all around the Coventry landfill that are bought up by Casella because they can't be sold, either because
yes.
they're polluted from previous eras in the landfill, or because it's just so close to the dump that nobody in their mind would buy it.
So, okay, is there anything else you would like to add to this interview?
I don't think so. This was fun.
Excellent. It will be going up online.
Great.
On VermontMovementNews.org shortly after I'm done editing it, and it will hit the various podcast sites shortly after that.
That's great.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Pam, and I will be going on next to speak to Rosemary Jakowski, whose house is unsaleable because of PFOA.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing this, Marina.
You're most welcome.
Okay. Bye.
Blood in the water, I know that it won't last. My light is brighter, and I hope that it will last. You think that it's directions, the ones you never choose. It's the way that you're facing determines if you lose. Fortunes that you made, choices that you gave, you want it, you want it. Now I am like the sun, bordering no one, you got it. And I love you until we get by. Love you till we get by. It's only when you want to bear me all your fruit. It's a labor of love, and honey, I choose you. And I'm picking up the pieces, ones that we don't have. It's the putting it together that's making me sad. You're the reason why I can't touch the sky. I want it, I want it. And I am like the sun, revolving everyone. And I love you until we get by. Baby, I love you, you know that we will make it right.
That was Until We Get By by Small Tall Order from freemusicarchive.org. The next guest has been a candidate for Attorney General many times in the state of Vermont, and she's an advocacy journalist who has dealt with the issue of PFOAs in Bennington. Welcome, Rosemary Jakowski.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell me about your experience with the PFOA issue in Bennington?
Yeah. First of all, I'd like to say that it has been known since the 1950s that DuPont was manufacturing this carcinogenic chemical known as PFOA. And there were lawsuits then, and I remember way back then when the tagline for DuPont was better living through chemistry. Well, now many decades later, we found out that the living is not so good through chemistry. And over this whole experience that we've been having down here for a number of years, I've come to several conclusions. I've got some suggestions. And number one is never trust the government. My number two suggestion is never trust the EPA, and there's lots of evidence down here to support that. For example, when a cancer cluster was detected right across the border in Hoosick Falls, New York, by a gentleman named Michael Hickey, he was unable to get any help from the government in testing the water supply. So he did it at his own expense. And I think that since this has happened, I have suggested that maybe much of the funding that's been going to the EPA should instead go to whistleblowers such as Michael Hickey, who are doing the job that the EPA can't seem to do. And my number three suggestion is never trust a corporation. We see the damage that they have already caused. And down here, it's not only the problem of the water. There have been many problems with the remediation projects that were necessary so that people would have access to safer water. And I'll tell you, it's been a real mess. People are very discouraged. This has gone on for a couple of years. I am one that has a lot of property damage, damage to my yard, damage to my drainage system, and so far it's uncompensated damage, and not much can be done about it. There are class action lawsuits, which probably won't be settled for many, many decades. We will all be dead. So I would like to say I am now connected to municipal water, and I think that anyone who's in this situation better learn to love the taste and smell of chlorine, because it's really something, and it's something to get used to. But beyond that is the cost of municipal water. And there will be people in some areas who will lose their homes because of this. If you can't pay for the water, then the town has the legal right to foreclose. So this is going to take many years to play out, and I don't know how it's going to end, but I don't think it's time to be very optimistic.
What will you say to people who live in areas that are facing similar PFOA contamination problems, perhaps from landfills? What advice would you have for them to fight this kind of situation?
Well, you have to be ready for a big fight, number one. Depends on who you're up against, the government or private company, but it can take over your whole life. I mean, it's an ongoing battle, 7 days a week for years, and the private individual is usually outmoneyed by the other side. So I don't know that there is an easy answer on one hand. On the other hand, I don't think people should give up. I think that the fight has to go on, and the government should do what it's supposed to do. And the EPA, as far as I know, does not even have a national standard when it comes to PFOA. And people need to know that this is all around us. It's in our clothes. I was reading somewhere just recently, I haven't verified this, that they're even starting to use it on sheets and pillowcases and bedding. I mean, it's all over. We're surrounded by it, and people have to be on guard and try to avoid it as much as possible, which is impossible because everyone has some in their blood. Yes. Everyone. In my situation, even though my well was contaminated, the PFOA level in my blood is almost normal, as if I didn't have a contaminated well. And I think that's because when I built my house in Vermont in 1985, something told me, don't drink the water. And I don't know how to explain that the water tasted and smelled and looked fine. The only thing I can attribute it to is divine intervention. Something told me don't drink the water, so I never did. And for 35 years, I carried in drinking water that I'd buy in the supermarket.
So what has this PFOA crisis in Bennington done to the value of your property?
That's really a good question. To my property now, it had a very, very bad effect because my yard's destroyed in part, not totally, and my drainage system is destroyed. So right now, my property value is very low, and of course, can't even use that to get an adjustment on property taxes. So I don't know. It will be on an individual case-by-case basis. But here's an example of one of the things that has been going on down here. There's a local family of medical people, doctors, and they had a contaminated well, and they chose to keep their contaminated well rather than sign up for municipal water. And that may seem hard to understand, but after going through the remediation process, I think they were the smart people. I often say, well, you know, it's a choice between cancer and foreclosure, so I don't know. And I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. In another couple of years, they'll find out that something else that we're allowing to get into the environment is even worse. It's not looking good.
Is there anything else you'd like to add? I think we've pretty much covered what has happened in Bennington.
Well, there is just one thing. If anybody is going through this and if the town or any governmental agency is active and representing them, they should try to get copies of the contracts between the government and the private agencies. For example, here, part of the problem is that the damage done to our yards to fix the problem was done by private companies that had contracts with the town. And people, of course, have a difficulty getting copies of the contracts. And one of the big problems in Vermont is that it is legal for private government boards and agencies to discuss and negotiate legal contracts in private, behind closed doors, in secret. And that is one change that I am advocating for now. All discussions of public boards should be public and available to all of the citizens. And the only exception I'd make is personnel matters, which would disclose private information of individual town employees and so forth. That's different. But legal contracts should all be well known and discussed in public meetings.
That was Rosemary Jacowski sharing her experience with PFOA in Bennington, Vermont. This next song, Derek Clegg's You're the Dummy, also from freemusicarchive.org, is dedicated to all the climate change deniers out there. Enjoy.
You're the dummy that don't believe in science. All your projects always be denying. You're the dummy that don't believe in science. All your projects always be denying. And I got thrown on half my words. I've got thrown on half my words. You're the dummy that don't believe in science. All your projects always be denying. You're the one I love, you're the one I wanna give to. Things got made in half the time. You're the one I wanna give to. Recognize that I can be here lately. the dummy that don't believe in science. Written on your forehead, always be denying. You're the dummy that don't believe in science. Written on your forehead, always be denying. Hey, hey. You're the dummy that don't believe in science. 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 You're the dummy that don't believe in science.
Our next guest is a wonderful activist who's leading Extinction Rebellion Central Vermont, Mindy Blank. Welcome.
Hi, Marina. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. So I'd like to hear a report back on the action in Montpelier. It did not seem to get very much mainstream reporting.
Yeah, well, it was, I would consider it a successful event, and there was a good amount of reporting around the state of Vermont, and then with a lot of Extinction Rebellion events, actions, they're publicized internationally. So I would consider it a success for several reasons. And we had about 40 people in the street, and so that was good. And a lot of new people came out, a lot of young people, a lot of youth came out, and that was really great. And it was interesting. It didn't go exactly as we had expected, but it was better in some ways. And the police were remarkably helpful, actually, in blocking off the streets and the traffic. And it definitely disrupted normal traffic in Montpelier in the morning. We had things blocked off for about 3.5 hours. But we were just blocking off one intersection with banners and with our bodies, but they blocked off the entire State Street and roads leading up to it. And so traffic downtown Montpelier was totally halted. And so we got to talk to a lot of people who were in traffic and who were wondering what was up. And that was our biggest goal with this, was to raise more awareness about the potential buyout of Vermont Gas Systems by Enbridge, a huge fossil fuel company that owns a lot of fossil fuel infrastructure in North America, and it's really problematic. And their buyout of Vermont Gas would probably mean more pipelines crossing our state, and the dangers that go along with that, and more natural gas and fracking. And so we wanted to, they're trying to get this buyout through the Public Utility Commission with very little public awareness around this. And 350.org, 350 Vermont, they've been doing quite a bit to raise awareness, and they have a petition with about 380 signatures on it. And they were in the meeting, and there are these people who are legal interveners and fighting against the proposed buyout. And they were in the meeting, but we wanted to call more attention to what they are doing around fighting this proposed buyout. And so that was definitely successful, and we definitely raised the profile on this, and a lot more people are aware of it now. And so I consider that to be a huge success. New people getting involved in the climate movement and raising awareness around this really important topic that's just sliding through and hasn't really been in the public eye in Vermont.
Which intersection did you block?
We were blocking off State Street and Taylor Street. But then it turned out that we blocked off all of State Street and intersections. I think that's Bailey Ave and Main Street. All of that was blocked, and that was blocked by the police.
So how many people do you think you reached directly?
That's a good question. Hundreds, because we also were walking around downtown, kind of like taking shifts and walking around and handing out some information about this proposed buyout and about Extinction Rebellion and who we are and what we're all about, walking around downtown and then talking to people in traffic. And we had 40 people spending 3.5 hours talking to folks in downtown Montpelier. And then I've seen, it's been interesting in social media on Facebook, I've seen a lot of people who don't usually post things about climate change or environmental things, like they reposted this, some of the media on the Extinction Rebellion action on Tuesday. And so that was really interesting to see. So it's hard to say how many people were reached, but I would say hundreds.
Was the reaction positive, or was it a mix? What was the best and what was the worst of the interactions?
The interactions in downtown Montpelier were mixed, of course, because we were blocking traffic and some people were not happy about that. And that makes total sense. You know, people trying to get to work, and that's controversial, whether people should be in the street blocking other people from getting to work. And there were some people that were screaming things out their window. And like this one woman yelled, "Get a life!" and then one woman got out of her car and she like aggressively came up to us and get the typical thing like, "Get a job!" And like, you know, "You're making me late," and all of this. And we sincerely apologize for that. Like, I don't want to be making people late, but the climate emergency is an inconvenience. It definitely is. And so to be raising the profile on this, trying to be really important. And one way to do that is to block traffic. So there were some in-person interactions that weren't super happy, but then there were other people who we talked to and they were like, "Oh, wow, I had no idea that this proposed bio, that this thing is going on, and thank you for telling me. And thank you for being out here doing this, because people need to know about it." And some really unlikely folks were really positive and supportive. And that was cool to see. And that was, I really enjoy those interactions with people. But I had a friend post an article about the action. Somebody who I wouldn't have expected to necessarily. And he was trying to generate conversation around whether this is an effective mechanism. And I find that conversation to be really compelling. And it's compelling because most of us who were out there in the street on Tuesday, we have jobs, and we have jobs where we're actively working on climate change issues. And this is our lives. And having mass actions or direct actions and actions in the street, it's another tactic. It's another tool to be generating more consciousness around this. And though it can be argued that we just look like loonies in the street and, you know, just like radicals and, you know, radical activists, but getting these words out there, like climate emergency, and getting this out there, I think is really important. And for people to be talking about, I view direct actions, and I'm really new to being involved with direct actions. This was the first one that I helped plan. And so that was really interesting. And I'm seeing it as another tool, another tactic of communication to raise the profile on the climate emergency. And also for the people out there, like, we're really struggling with climate collapse, and there's so much grief around this and so much collective grief. And it's actually like a really good channel for that grieving process.
Were there any arrests?
There were no arrests, no arrests. And I'm personally really happy about that. There were no arrests, and there were, you know, like some people get involved with direct actions because they want to get arrested. Yeah. I'm not one of those people. I don't really want to get arrested, and I don't want to plan something where people are going to get arrested. And that was an interesting process. I was noticing myself just feeling a lot of nervousness leading up to this event, because it was like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. And organizing this thing where people are putting their bodies on the line, and they're, you never really know what's going to happen. And so I was feeling really just nervous that it would turn into something violent, or that like something unprecedented would happen. And that would feel like, as a co-organizer of this, that would be like something that I would feel responsible for. So no arrests, nothing violent at all. And that's, as we talked about last week, that's one of the main principles of Extinction Rebellion, is that it's nonviolent. And so stuck to that, and that was really good.
What's next? Is this momentum being built on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. We have a lot of things coming up in the fall. on September 20th. That is the Youth Day of Action, called for by Greta Thunberg. And so that's youth-led, but we plan on supporting the efforts of the youth for that. So more information to come. And then there will be another day in September where Extinction Rebellion has another action, and other groups in Vermont will be part of that also. And then there are many things planned for October also. I have to be a little secretive about those things right now.
How do people get in touch with you to get involved with these actions?
Yeah, well, all of the Vermont groups have Facebook pages, and we have a website that's just about to launch that's specifically for Vermont, Extinction Rebellion Vermont. I think there are maybe 6 Extinction Rebellion groups around the state, maybe more. Maybe they keep popping up, but you can look us up on Facebook, Extinction Rebellion Vermont or Extinction Rebellion Central Vermont. And that would probably be the best way. If you don't have Facebook, then you could get in touch with me directly.
And what's your contact?
My contact is mindyblank@gmail.com.
Excellent. There's a big demonstration coming up in Williston regarding ICE. Is your group involved with this?
Not directly, but a lot of the people in our group are attending. Yeah, that's an important one.
Excellent. Yeah, I've seen some of Extinction Rebellion groups in Vermont are endorsing.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we talk about climate justice is migrant justice, and it's all very, very related. And those particular marginalized populations are incredibly important to fight for.
I've heard a lot about Honduras, that the reason that people are coming here is because there was a right-wing coup that was fomented by the U.S. and by Secretary of State Clinton in particular. I've also heard other people saying it's a climate thing. What is your take on that?
I would have to decline to comment just because I don't feel like I can speak well enough to that to give a good opinion.
Understood. So is there anything else you'd like to add to this interview?
Well, one thing about the direct action on Tuesday, and this is a good point to get across about Extinction Rebellion, because we also have a banner that says business as usual equals death. And the name Extinction Rebellion can kind of put people off also. But what we're trying to do is, I mean, while we're talking about very serious things, climate emergency, societal collapse, we're also trying to not make it all about death and doom. So our event on Tuesday in the street in Montpelier was a beach party. and our message was no new fossil fuel infrastructure. The waters are already rising. And we played music and we danced and we're out there. And so we're trying to, yeah, as I said, it's a way to channel grief, but it's not, we're trying to not just be about like death and skeletons.
Yes.
And so I think that's an important point about Extinction Rebellion.
Excellent. So yeah. This was Mindy Blank reporting back on the July 23rd Extinction Rebellion protest in Montpelier. Thank you very much, Mindy.
Thank you so much, Marina.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. And we will close with the audio from the demonstration in Williston against ICE on July 28, 2019, as people were being arrested in civil disobedience to protest ICE.
Welcome. Yeah. 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 And she's and she's Thank you.
Later in the month, we hope to do report backs from the demonstration in Williston and cover the trial of those arrested for civil disobedience. We hope to soon have an events and announcements section for our podcast. If you have an event you want to advertise on our podcast, email us at vermontmovementnews@protonmail.com. Use the same email address for comments or fan mail or hate mail if you want to send us that. It may be a few days after the publishing of this announcement that that email address is active. So if it bounces, just wait and send us later. If you enjoy Vermont Movement News, consider donating to us through www.patreon.com/Vermont Movement News. It costs money for our teleconferencing software, and we would like to upgrade our microphones and possibly our computer equipment. We're not looking for a lot of money, just enough to help offset the costs. Thank you very much. Well, that about wraps up this episode for the week of July 28th of Vermont Movement News. I hope you enjoyed it. You can visit our website at www.vermontmovementnews. We are also available on Blueberry, Google Play Music, and iTunes. We hope to add other platforms. Thank you.